and welcome to Progressive Opinions of Color, a podcast that seeks to create space for people of color in conversations about economics and politics. I am your host, Nancy Wu, and today I have one of my best friends from college and ever since. His name is John Montgomery. He's a therapist based in Chicago, and he's going to talk about what it's like to be Black and a therapist and in Chicago, how workplaces can better address the BIPOC community's needs, our experiences of going to grad school in the UK and how racism there differed from the US, as well as some thoughts on the upcoming election and some thoughts on the mental health industry, the healthcare industry, and our personal experiences with mental health and seeking help for that. So that being said, be sure to listen and subscribe if you haven't already, and also leave a review on Apple Podcasts if you haven't already, and let's get started. Hi, John. What's up? What are you
doing? Hi, Nancy. We're such losers.
I know.
Well, hi, everyone. My name is John. I am a therapist based in Chicago. I studied psychology at Dartmouth, and I got my master's in clinical psychology at the University of Edinburgh. Currently working as a therapist now in Chicago, but I've worked with a variety of populations. I've worked with adolescent boys in a residential treatment facility. I have worked with basically all populations in inpatient psych, but my core unit was working with adolescent girls. And that taught me that I just really love working with the youth. So I think when I do start my private practice, which is coming soon, I'll probably specialize in just developmental psychology and working with young people. I just love the resilience of young people a lot. But right now I am working for a behavioral health company. And I work with adults with co-occurring mental illnesses and substance use disorders. Oh, yeah. And I'm doing a second master's at Northwestern starting next week.
Okay. John's a fucking badass. And you're all going to get you're going to look at children. But
yeah, y'all are past my age group. But I'll also have resources for adults and stuff, because mental health is lifelong and it's important to take care of it. Shout out to mental health and shit.
Yes. Make our kids not as fucked up as we've become.
Oh God. No, that's a word. I've been looking at, so my new thing is the fucking Instagram pages devoted to mental health and anxiety tips and how to overcome depression and feeling sad and intrusive thoughts and all of that stuff. And through studying these Instagram pages, the recurring theme is that most of the shit that you're dealing with right now happened in childhood. It started from there, and you've developed all of these habits and stuff from childhood, and that most of therapy now is about granted, depending on the type of therapy you're doing, but some way or another, therapy is going to bring into account your childhood and your family dynamics. And you're going to have this huge realization of how everything was fucked up from the very beginning. And now you ended up here. So yes, yeah. You definitely want to raise kids better.
That's exactly what happened. I learned all the shit that my parents did that I was just repressing, and I was this is why I'm like this. And then I felt a lot of resentment and didn't want to come home. And then COVID happened and I came home, and then I was really mad at them for a few months, and now I'm kind of getting used to it.
That's real. The beginning of this year, I was so mad at my parents, so pissed off at them because of just realizations that I was having. I would not talk to them at all. And I think they started noticing at least my dad was noticing how depressed I was actually getting. And me and my dad don't have deep conversations or anything like that. He's very laid back. He smokes his weed. He's if you need anything, just let me know. Otherwise, as long as you're alive and having a good time, like, we're good. I don't want to stop you. And so, like, I feel like there was always a piece missing from our relationship. Like, I missed, like, you know, having, like, those emotional and meaningful conversations with him. And then, like, it was random because I feel like I was like, mad at him for maybe, like, 3 weeks. So I ignored all of his phone calls for those 3 weeks. I was, like, in a space of where, like, I'm like, this conversation is not going to be emotionally satisfying. I'm just not going to answer. And then he called me, and then, like, something in my body just said pick up. And, like, he was just like, hey, I've, like, been, like, concerned about you. Like, I actually, like, want to have a genuine conversation with you. And then, like, I was pissed, and I was like, well, you know, you haven't made it easy to have a genuine conversation with you. Because when I was a child, you did X, Y, and Z, and, like, this is why I don't feel comfortable anymore. And he was just like, I get it. Like, I completely get it, son. And, like, I want to have more conversations about what I did wrong, but I also, like, want to have conversations about, like, what I can do moving forward. And, like, I couldn't even say anything to that because that is, like, what I did not expect from this guy at all. Like, that's not my dad.
That's a really good response.
Yeah, I don't know who taught him that.
It's the Instagram pages.
So, yeah, so I am working as a therapist now for a behavioral health organization. And I basically service a very vulnerable population of primarily elderly minorities who have physical disabilities, mental disabilities, and substance use disorders all together. This population, they usually don't have family or they're, you know, coming straight out of the nursing home or an assisted living facility, and they just, like, have no support, and they can barely, like, maintain living independently on their own. So I work on a team of therapists and case managers to essentially make sure that, you know, this group of people are able to live independently, like, for as long as they're in the community. But with, you know, this COVID situation, it completely changed, as most people have found, that has completely changed my line of work. So I went from seeing the same clients every 2 to 4 times a week to make sure that they're, you know, managing their mental health and they're having time to speak to a therapist and they're managing their medications. All of these things that I would see them in person for, suddenly, like, the end of March, it cut completely. And they were just like, no, you're going to see all of these people virtually. And then, you know, my agency would only see them to, like, manage their medications. But these were people we'd have to check up on, you know, to make sure they were, you know, completing their hygiene and managing their homes and just taking care of, like, their bills and stuff like that. Like, those very basic things, like, we were not able to see them anymore. So, like, right now, we're, like, phasing into reopening. It's a bunch of bullshit because we should not be reopening. I'll just say that now. But yeah, we're pretending that coronavirus isn't the thing right now. So we're in, like, a reopening integration phase where we're starting to see our clients more. And we're starting to, like, you know, be able to meet their needs more than we were during the beginning of quarantine. Most of my clients are super symptomatic and they've definitely just, like, regressed in terms of, like, their mental health and, like, their behaviors and stuff. And they, like, have a lot of work to do. And, like, that's been a struggle to manage, obviously, because, like, most of my job consists of me seeing people, like, in person, but, like, at a time where COVID is an issue, like, for the safety of everybody involved, we haven't been able to do that. But we've still been doing a lot. Like, they say they wanted us to cut back on work. And I found that, like, they've been, like, taking advantage of the work that we actually do. The way that these agencies work, right, is that, you know, you see a client for an hour and then you write this case note about what you worked on in an hour and what you've talked about. And then that case note is going to give you, you know, X amount of dollars for billing. So by the end of the week, they expect you to have billed for X amount of money. And they initially told us in the beginning of all of this that billing is not going to be a big deal because they understand what's happening. Somehow now they're fucking down our throats about the work that we're not doing and how they don't feel like we're doing 40 hours worth of work. And they're like challenging certain staff members about what a full work day looks like. And like, they're looking through schedules to see like what doesn't add up. And I'm like, yo, y'all are being fucking ridiculous. At the end of the day, first of all, like, people are dealing with shit and they're doing the best they can with this job. Well, like, people are dealing with shit and like, you're still hanging on to this capitalist mindset of you need to produce these hours, which is A, unrealistic, but also B, it doesn't matter. Like, the work is going to get done and like, the services are going to be provided as safely as possible and like, as thoroughly as possible. But like, we're not even, like, they don't even know what's going on right now. And, like, every day is just something different. So it's like they still have the same pressure of, yo, you're here to make us money. And if you don't make us money, then you're a problem. And I hate that. And I actually complained to them about it because I think especially, like, just being Black and being a therapist and just like dealing with coronavirus already, like I have a lot of shit that I'm dealing with because I'm dealing with like my client stuff and that's stressful. And then like I'm dealing with my own stuff with, you know, like the political climate and quarantine and like I'm trying to take care of myself. But like taking care of myself is like, it's very difficult when my job is demanding stuff of me and I don't feel like I'm being supported by, you know, like leadership in the proper way. And I actually told them about it. Like I was super upset about everything. I was fucking angry in like April slash now forever at this point. But like, I actually told them, I don't think you're supporting your Black and Brown staff enough. And like, you all want us to work a ridiculous 40 hours a week in the middle of a pandemic. And they're still concerned about hours and numbers, and especially being in a leadership role now, I really see how much they really care about meeting numbers and production and all of this other stuff, which is like, granted, like that's how they make their money, but like we're literally in the middle of the pandemic. Like, what do you expect from us? And they didn't mention anything at all until like I broke down in front of them and told them like how I don't think this is fair. And I just genuinely don't believe, like they told me, I understand how you feel. The most we can do is like give you days off if you need days off, which is lovely. I appreciate that so much. However, I just don't believe if white people were affected by this virus in the same way, I don't think like the answer they would give us is, oh, we just don't know what to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they will find a way.
All around white people.
Always. So yeah, that's been pretty frustrating.
There needs to be flexibility about working during COVID because it's just not the same. And like,
yeah, like, and it's like my staff are not doing well. Like everybody is feeling like shit. And I mean, mind you, we don't even have that many, you know, Black and Brown staff there, but like they pretend nothing's happening. And they don't want to have conversations about how to support us.
And as a therapist, like, your guys' mental health matters, too. Like, if you guys are feeling miserable about work because of, like, the toxic environment, how does that help patients?
And it's actually really, really sad because, like, being in this leadership role now, I see how, like, jaded my staff are. And, of course, we, like, encourage them to take, you know, days off and like you try to work within the system to like figure out what's the problem and what you can do to solve it. But like the sad part is that I just think the system in general is just really fucked up and there's not a way, at least working in an agency setting, because I've worked in residential treatment facilities for teen boys, and I've worked in inpatient psych as well before this. And what pushed me away was all of the rules and the regulations, and they seem to be very focused on producing numbers. And it seemed like it was less about client care. So I really wanted to do community-based work. And so I decided to start working at a community-based organization. The same shit in different ways. And I think it's sad because at the end of the day, everybody has this mindset of, we can only do what we can, but we're not responsible for this. We have to answer to these other people. So we have to give them what they want. Which is why, my end goal is to really have my own private practice. Yeah. But, as long as we're in the system of pushing productivity and notes and shit for the sake of getting paid and billing, and also, the issue with, Big Pharma and all of that stuff, which is, another completely, different conversation, nothing's ever going to work. So I don't find this to be enjoyable. I'll be able to find enjoyment in my job when I can provide free to low income therapeutic services to very disadvantaged populations.
How does our healthcare system, do you guys have to prescribe certain medications because of profits? Does that make you guys more likely to prescribe? Is it harder to offer services to disadvantaged groups?
So I've talked to a number of psychiatrists, and I've had psychiatrists tell me that they can't get billed for services unless they prescribe certain medications to clients. They can't bill for consultations unless, they've put somebody on meds, or, at least they if the client took something that away from them. So all of that shit is set up for the sake of getting people medicated so they can pay the doctor. So that was one thing. But also with me working for an agency, I do work with a big population of people who, need those mental and physical health services. So I do work with a team of primary care doctors and psychiatrists, so all of their services can be linked. But the logistics of it is what makes it fucked up, because obviously as a doctor, you need to get paid and you do this work that you should get service for, but not at the expense of putting people on medications or just diagnosing people with certain disorders just so they could fit this application, because you need to fit a code to get into certain programs. So the DSM is very coded. Every disorder has a code. And so on these applications, they have to be able to fit clients into a certain demographic or code in order to get them placed for treatment. So they find it very beneficial to be able to label you and put you on meds, even if that's not necessarily what you are. Well, I went to a primary doctor first because I just wanted to have a regular checkup, but also I wanted to get a referral to see a psychiatrist about my anxiety and depression. And then when I get there and I'm telling him about my issues and stuff like that, he's like, oh no, that's fine. I can just prescribe you. I'll write you the referral or whatever, but I'll just prescribe you some meds now. And I was like, oh, I thought it was going to be a more thorough process where I'd actually get assessed and we'll move from there. But no, right after my checkup, he just gave me some Lexapro.
Wow. I kept thinking medicines are just prescribed so commonly because it's no big deal. Everyone takes them, but not so in other countries. It's just the US profiting off of overprescribing sometimes. And I just want to make sure that I'm getting actual medication that I need, mm-hmm. rather than just to fill a doctor's revenue mark.
Yeah. And granted, I am all for medications under the right circumstances. Like, I don't think it should be a standalone thing. Like, obviously, like, the best treatment would be meds plus therapy and a lifestyle change. But I don't, like, necessarily think everyone needs meds, which is why I, like, put it off for so long. But this year has just kicked my ass, and I actually needed more support. But, like, most of, like, the services, they, like, force you into or encourage you to, like, take medications without, like, thinking of other alternatives, which is not at all. Because if you're not making the lifestyle change, then the medications are only going to help so much. Like, you're still going to feel the same for the most part if you're not doing anything to change it. And then on top of that, like, the medications are so dangerous. Like, these are very addictive drugs. And, like, if you take them for, like, 2 months and then you just stop abruptly, like, so many of my friends talk about, like, how suicidal they were when they just stopped taking their meds out of nowhere. Like, to decide to take meds is, like, you actually have to think it through, because it's a really serious thing. So my doctor, my primary care doctor who prescribed the medications, told me that at least for the ones that I'm taking, they recommend taking them for a 2-year minimum, which was surprising to me. He explained, like, the chemical process and just the therapeutic process in general. And he said it usually takes 2 years for it to, like, do its work. Which was a surprise to me, because I thought people would just take meds for, like, a few months and then they could just, like, ease off of them.
Yeah. I haven't heard of the 2-year thing. I felt pretty good results after, like, 6 months, and then I stopped after 6 months for, like, 3 or 4 months. I didn't really feel any side effects either from stopping, which was interesting. Mm-hmm. But every body is different. And then by the end of the fourth month, that was pretty bad. So now I've been on it again for, like, 3 or 4 months. I don't know.
I started taking mine in June. So it's been, like, 4 months, I think. So, like, for you, because it's been a similar time and you took them in the past, like, what month for you were you, like, yeah, I could definitely feel the change? Because, I mean, like, obviously I went through, like, the first month of just, like, being able to see drastic changes and, like, feeling side effects or whatever. And then month two, I'm kind of like, okay, I think, like, this is my norm. But, like, now I'm, like, not even sure if, like, they work or not. I just feel normal.
That's the thing. You don't feel it working. You feel, like, it doesn't make you feel good. It just makes you, like, not feel bad. So you, like, notice that, like, it takes away the bad stuff, but it doesn't make you, like, happy or anything. I think I felt, like, just immediately not miserable once I started taking it the second time, like, a week in. The first time it took a few weeks, like, maybe 2 months for me to really feel a difference. I guess it's different.
Well, let me ask you a question. Uh-huh. So, in the midst of quarantine and everything, how have you been managing your mental health?
Yes. My mental health has been really good, but I don't think it's correlated to quarantine. I think it's correlated to, during quarantine, I actually went back to California to be with my family and to be with my support system. I actually feel much better. And I think that's more due to the change in location. Because my biggest, like, the thing getting me down the most in New York City was just this overwhelming sense of loneliness from not having a close support system there. And without that being something always on the back of my mind, in California, I'm able to, like, focus on other things.
I feel like we oftentimes forget how much we actually have control of when we feel so disempowered and, like, we can't do anything. But, like, there's this one quote that, like, stuck with me. Like, this person that I really looks up to, like, said it, and I think about it every day. But it's just like, how would you live if you didn't think things were going to change? And, like, that's in reference to, you know, like, politics and just, like, quarantine and just like everything, right? Like, how would you, like, live? Like, how would you make your life better? How would you, like, cultivate your own happiness? And so, like, one thing that has, like, helped me take care of myself through quarantine, as you know, is meditation. Like, I have, like, depression and like anxiety through the roof. And like my mind is always going. And I'm like, you know, I think like happiness is overrated and it's a very like fleeting emotion, as most emotions are. But I just think like sadness is like my baseline. But like, I think like I've been like meditating so much and it's been so powerful because like I realized that like we can control our own emotions. Like I would be so sad some days and I'm like, I don't want to feel like this today. Like, in what ways can I cultivate joy? Like, let me like meditate and just see what like flows through me. And like, it fucking works every time. Like,
what?
We can absolutely control our emotions.
I want to learn that.
I'll send you some YouTube inspirations because like, I don't know. I just feel so like in control of my mind in ways that I never knew before. Like, because I'm never sad anymore, really. And like, or when I am, I can like acknowledge that, oh, you know, like this experience was very fucked up. And yeah, I do like, I feel bad right now, but it's going to be good in like an hour. Like,
yeah.
I don't like soak in things anymore.
I've been feeling like that too. And that's so different from before where it was like the world is literally ending and I don't like kill myself. I don't know how anything's ever going to get better. Like those thoughts came under my head so much, which was just a much unhealthier state of mind that I was
in. That's funny because I was having this conversation with a friend like 2 days ago and like she's the most caring person ever. And like she just cares so much about like people and making sure they're well. Obviously, like the empaths are the ones who suffer the most because they like take on so much. And like this friend encourages everybody to open up and release, but she doesn't follow like that same advice. And so we were just having a real conversation about just like it being okay to like release emotions and like show that. And like, you don't even need like the problems to like your situations to be solved right away. You want to be heard. You want to be seen, validated for your emotions. And you just want to express them. Like, and so like, I find that like so many people don't actually feel comfortable with like feeling negative emotions and like expressing them when like that's really the answer to all of your problems, because problems are always going to be there and like we're going to be sad about so much, but like the thing that eats you up the most is not being able to express that. That I think that's what makes up for like so much of my anxiety now, because I realized just like how suppressed I was as a child and like how my emotions were never validated. So I like, according to my therapist, I grew up questioning my reality a lot to this point to like where now I just like feel like I'm in this space of like depersonalization and derealization. But like, had I been able to like talk about like how I felt or just like process how I felt with like a parent or just like someone else, like during childhood, I would have an easier way to like express myself now. So like, I agree with that. Like it's so important to just like feel those negative emotions and just let that shit out.
Oh my God. I feel like we've both grown like so much every time we talk to each other in terms of just like mental health awareness and like self growth. I'm loving it.
I know. It's like every month because we go like 1 month without talking to each other. And then like the next month we give a full update and it's something completely different.
I'm glad you're like doing much better.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited. Honestly, I just feel like, I don't know, and maybe it's just trauma, but like, and also because like, are you struggling with like feeling like this shit is real? Like, I feel like I still feel detached from my body in a lot of ways. And like, I still struggle to experience things. Like I can observe them just fine, but I like struggle to experience it. I don't know. Even just like thinking about like the, like Chicago has had this issue all of pandemic, you know, Donald Trump fucking hates us. And also we're Chicago. So like, like, we have had, like, it's been a shit show dealing with the police and the protests and, like, just general militarization of the city and, like, racism. Like, I see so much happening on the streets on a, like, daily basis, but I don't feel it until, like, days later. But, like, I can watch it, I can see it, and I can, like, identify, like, this shit is fucked up, but, like, I don't think about it until, like, days later. Like, this is everything that I learned about. This is, like, 1960 shit. This person, like, hates me. Like, I don't feel it personally until days later.
It's so apocalyptic, everything that's been happening, that it's not even real. Like, I don't think our bodies have even caught up with the situation. Every month, 2020, some new shit happens. Like, right now, the sky has been gray for... At least it's not orange like it is in NorCal, but it's been gray for like the whole week. I haven't been outside because of the fires. And then,
fires are brutality. Fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, like literally everything is happening right now, and I cannot keep up with all the bad shit that's been happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't sink in. So, how has Chicago been lately? Like, that must be fucking insane. I still remember when you got like pulled over by a police on a horse.
Oh God. Okay. That was all my fault. I was doing things I shouldn't have been doing in a car. I was on my way to Bottomless Brunch, but I was having a sip of tequila in the car, and a policeman pulled up and asked me, what am I doing? He was nice, and he was a white man, ironically.
Dang.
But like, I don't know, like Chicago is... Things have calmed down, but, like, I mean, like, over the summer, like, I swear, like, they were using war tactics against us. Like, I was hearing, like, helicopters and sirens, like, at 3 o'clock in the morning, every morning, and it was just, like, it was a very weird environment, but, like, now it's just, like, we're not in quarantine, and, like, there's no issue. And, like, granted, Chicago has managed to, like, manage its, like, coronavirus rates pretty well, I guess you can say, for the most part. Shout out to Lori Lightfoot. But I feel like everything is reopening way too soon. Like, it's not safe. Like, I told you that, like, my sister is back in school. She's in her senior year of high school. But, like, in August, there was no plan for her to go back to school. And she started school in the middle of August. There were like 2 or 3 days where she actually had to go into the school for learning. But she was given the option to like learn from home. And so like I had to have like this conversation with her and, you know, like my mom about like the pros and cons of each issue. And then obviously I have this issue with my job where they want us to reopen and see clients the way we were seeing them before coronavirus started. The only difference is they would come to the office at first. Now the office is shut down. So they expect us to like meet them at home and do the same services, which I think is absolutely ridiculous. I don't know. I just feel like the cases are gonna like go up, like they're destined to go up in the winter, but then again maybe they won't, because like people will be out less, assuming. I just find a hard time like seeing that. But if cases are to go up, I'll say that we're gonna have to like shut this shit down back so much more, and that's gonna like traumatize my clients all over again, because like they went, you know, like 5 months without like the care that they were so used to giving, and they decompensated so poorly. And then we were bringing this back for a couple of months only to take it away again. I think like that's a really bad idea. But like, I spend most of my days wondering if I'm like out of my mind, because like I just see everyone behaving as if like no pandemic is happening right now. And so like, I find myself just questioning like, what is life anymore? I don't know. It's just me wondering again what the fuck is going on. But then, like, on top of that, this is Chicago and the weather's about to get really, really bad too. And I'm telling everyone to get ready for like a terrible winter, because to deal with the cold and to deal with like the pandemic, like it's gonna eat our asses up, and I don't think we're ready. So people need to prepare for that now. But at least you got like good weather in California.
Yeah. I mean, it's hot as fuck and like on fire, but when that goes away, it'll be better.
You know, that's okay. You know, to be honest, I always say, maybe that's like insensitive, but I feel like life is too good in California. Like if one of our cities or like states have to go first, it has to be California, because y'all have had it too good for too long.
Wow. You know what? Fair, because I do feel like my worst days and my happiest days in New York are still like comparable to my worst days in California.
I want to hear about this, your opinions on like UK fake versus like US / California fake, because Nancy and I studied in grad school in the UK at the same time. So she, yeah. While she was getting her master's at Oxford, I was in Edinburgh in Scotland getting mine. So like, we got to live abroad together for a while.
Yeah, good times. And we traveled. We went to Paris and Scotland, mm-hmm. and like hung out. I think like the niceness in the UK is so hard to pick up on when you're from the US, that like I didn't for many months. And whenever people said like, oh, interesting, or is that so? I was like, yeah, let me tell you more, dude. But they would be like, no, that means I don't give a fuck about this at all. And I was like, wait, that's just straight up.
Yeah. Thing.
Whereas in California, it's like people are extra nice, but it's kind of, it's like, oh, hi, how's your day? Or like, I don't know. But I just like New York because people are assholes, but at least you know that like they're not lying to your face.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate you being blunt and just like telling me you don't like me or you do, or, you know, whatever, like up front. Like in the UK, I had a hard time with a tone. I didn't understand like what they meant by like their tone of voice a lot, but like literally the phrases they would say, like if you tell me that's interesting, I literally think it's interesting.
Exactly.
Not that is not interesting.
Who says then, that's interesting? It means like that's not interesting at all.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time guessing. Or remember like we had that conversation in Scotland. I forgot what exactly happened, but like maybe it wasn't Scotland. Maybe it was somewhere else. But like, we had a conversation with somebody, and then like we left that conversation, and then an hour later, we were like, "Yeah, I don't think that person liked us very much. I don't think they actually meant what they said they meant." And it was a lot of that. Like, I didn't realize like what people actually meant until retrospect.
Yeah. Like, it seems in a long time after.
Mm-hmm. Also, just, like, dealing with, like, the UK racism was it was just too much for me. Like, I was tired of that. Because, like, when we went, it was 2016. Like, this was in the middle of the election. Like, we were thinking we were getting away at, like, the right time. Like, little did we know, like, everything just, everywhere became a political mess at that moment. But, like, I was seeing like how like America was finally being seen as a joke by other countries. I love that, because America deserves. But like, I can like say that I just like hated the racism that I dealt with in the UK in ways that I like didn't necessarily experience in like the US. Like, you know, white people like saying the N-word or like touching my hair, like I've had a couple of those experiences here, but like it was like an expected norm like there. And like when I would like say something about it, they would treat me like I was like the crazy one. And then like my friends, like these were like friends of friends at the same time. So like I would never have like a friend of a friend here who would think like something like that is okay. There, like I did. And that, I think that just speaks to like how widespread this stuff is. But like, there was like one experience where I was like, I was at dinner with like a bunch of friends, and there was like this chick from Poland. And she actually told me that like, she just like thought that Black people were like less than. And like, she felt like, she would like, she said this to me with like a straight face, as if she thought like nothing was wrong about it. Like, this is common knowledge. Everybody believes this. And she was from Greenland, actually. Let me get it right. And she was just like, yeah, she thinks, you know, Black people are less than, and like in her country, they are at least, but like, she had a good time, like getting to know me and shit like that. And
wow. Like,
it was so ridiculous. And so like, I was like, so taken aback that like, it took me a minute to process what was happening. So, I mean, eventually, like, I went off on her, of course, but like, I looked around at Nancy and like, nobody said anything. Like, they was just looking at her and like, nobody defended me in that moment. And like, I just like, after I cursed her out, I just like walked home after that. And then because like, we all worked together that next day at work, they all talked to her as if nothing happened. But they came up to me like behind closed doors and told me how they thought it was fucked up. And I was like, no, fuck y'all. Because wow. Y'all, you don't get to choose to be racist in private. And then like, when you see me, you pretend everything is okay. Or you just don't get to be like that okay with this situation. Like, you're part of the problem.
I can't stand how there's such a fear of offending people. It's seen as so rude to stand up against like to someone to like defend you in that situation and like castigize her, but like it wasn't rude for her to say that. Like,
yeah, exactly.
People are so much more concerned about her feelings than like your feelings.
You literally just told me I'm like 3/5 of human.
And how dumb is that person to just like think that her perception of growing up in the middle of fucking nowhere in Greenland like makes her opinions any valid. Mm-hmm, like, did you really exactly. think your opinion was valid enough for you to express that? Like, you dumbass.
Yeah. It was like that moment for me that just made me, I think like that was the defining moment for me that made me feel like Black American is like my identity, and that like we're often just like pushed to the margins, and like if we don't have anybody, we like have ourselves, because like we're at the bottom of everybody's totem pole. And it also makes me think of like, so I like read Trevor Noah's book, and like in the book, he would talk about like the apartheid and like South Africa, but he like told this story about like how basically like South African politicians and lawmakers studied American slavery and racism because they just thought it was like so concise and like just so inundated like in the culture of America that they wanted to like copy that but make it better for their own society. And so like racism and slavery is literally like embedded in our culture to that point, to like where other countries have studied our systems to like to master their like bias. And so like,
oh,
I thought about that a lot. Just about like how really just like being a minority in America comes with like its own set of privileges. It's also like extremely fucked. So like, I find a hard time finding safety a lot of the times. So like, I just turn to other like Black and brown Americans who can like actually like get the system we're under. So yeah, I in 2016 I wanted to get the fuck out of the US because of Trump, and now 2018 I wanted to get the fuck back, and now 2020 I am ready to get the fuck out again because election season is looking a bit rough.
I know, fuck.
I saw your, I listened to your podcast too about Kamala Harris, and I loved it because I love Kamala Harris. She was not like one of my favorites by any means, like in the beginning of primaries, but like I think she was like the obvious and perfect choice for Joe Biden's running mate, because like, just like you said, like I don't feel like Republicans know how to box her in or what to say about her. It's like, is she a Black woman? Is she an Indian woman? Is she like too conservative? Is she too, like, progressive? Like, what is her stance on, you know, like, policing, actually? Like, we talk so much about her policing record, but, like, Kamala Harris was, like, one of the few politicians I actually saw protesting with people and talking about defunding the police. So, like, I think Kamala Harris is great.
That's badass that she actually did that. It's like, she gets so much shit on from progressives for, like, switching sides or whatever, but I actually think, like, yeah, it'd be ideal if she didn't do that in the past, but if she learned from it and show that she's grown through her actions, then, like, yeah. We don't have anyone better right now.
We literally don't have anyone better, which means we need to vote, because the lesser of two evils argument is absolutely a real thing, and I'm tired of, like, people trying to convince us that it's not.
I hear so many, like, philosophies kids from Dartmouth, like, alums posting shit about how, like, oh, well, you know, like, it's still morally wrong to choose, like, the lesser of two evils. Like, you should not choose any evil. And I'm like, well, so how the hell does not choosing anyone help? How is not voting going to be better? Like, how is that?
Yeah.
Like, what effectively does that do?
Yeah. Because there's
arguments about this.
It's like, I mean, like, where to even start? Because I just have a lot of feelings about, like, that argument, because I do think, for one, it's, like, a privileged perspective, like, to say that, oh, nothing's going to change in your life, like, if you vote or if you not vote, but, like, it absolutely will. I mean, like, a Supreme Court seat is up for grabs at this point, and I mean, like, abortion rights are up for grabs at this point, like, gay rights was, same-sex rights were always an issue. And, like, poor people are always a fucking issue. And, like, there's no way that, like, anybody who's in the middle or just, like, have no opinions on, like, Trump or Biden, like, you're speaking from a very privileged or very ignorant perspective. And, like, also, the other thing with Kamala Harris is just, like, yes, she was a prosecutor, and, like, I feel like there's no way to, like, have jobs like that and be liked, you know? Like, I think most politicians are, like, gonna be hated because that's their line of work. But also, like, Kamala Harris is upholding the law. Because, like, that's her job, and, like, that's the law at the time. Like, so we're gonna, like, fight her instead of fight the law. Like, that doesn't really make, you know, much sense to me.
That's true. Let's fight the law rather than fighting someone who, like, once, like, did not fight the law.
Yeah.
I think Americans and Trump, and, like, it's just easier to place blame on someone and pick out the flaws rather than think about, like, how do we fix things? How do we improve? And it's
and that, again, that brings me back to the point that I talked about in the beginning of with my job and, like, the racist white leadership. Like, I feel like they have tried to place blame more so than, like, find solutions. And I feel like when you are in that privileged spot, like, it's very easy to, like, place blame. But, like, if, like, this was a white issue or a rich white issue, we would find ways for a solution. We would, like, deconstruct society as much as possible to make it fucking work. And, like, until it, like, works for everybody, like, I'm not for it. Like, I don't have any more energy to, like, give to, like, these fake hopes for change or anything like that anymore.
I fundamentally don't think, like, any organization can be for profit and also care about racial justice. When all of these companies were posting things about, like, Black Lives Matter and shit, like, in black squares on their page, and saying that they were going to, like, take action to stand up for, like, racial, like, equality or whatever, I was like, most of you guys are based in San Francisco or New York City or Chicago or LA, very diverse cities, and you do not have that same representation of diversity in leadership or in your staff. And unless you make an effort to, like, hire as many people and promote them and to, like, actually make your workplaces equal and start from there, you're not doing shit. And, like, all these companies, like, literally, apparently 60 tech companies partner together to all have one black person on their board of directors by September 2021. I was like, it takes a year for you to find a black person on your like board of directors. Like, there are so many talented people out there. Why does it take so long? Like, and you guys are making that sound like it's a big deal. Like, wow, you get a gold star for hiring one black person to
lead. And it's one black person. Like, with that, first of all, it's just like representation means nothing if it doesn't come with like the power for change. And one black person in leadership is not gonna like take anything away from like all of these white folks who are gonna overpower that one white voice for one. And secondly, it's just going to make you a token. Like,
yeah,
you're not going to feel comfortable speaking up. They're going to shame you for speaking up. And it's just like, adding one person in leadership doesn't do it.
Like, add more people. Why does it take a whole year to just find one person? I don't get it.
But a whole year, though? That's ridiculous.
I
was like,
did I misread that? They meant 2020, right? Thank you all for tuning in. That was the episode today. And we have plenty of more topics and conversations on the topic of mental health coming up in the future. Just a disclaimer that everything John and I talked about today was based on our own experiences with mental health of ourselves and in the places around us that we've worked and experienced. And it should be taken just as that, as personal experience. Every person is different, and the care that everyone needs and the medications that everyone needs and therapy is going to be different. And I urge that if you are struggling to seek professional help, and even if you're not struggling right now, if you're feeling great, I think if you have the resources for it, everyone should have a therapist. I think it would make the world a better place. And it's just amazing how far you can go when you self-reflect and have someone to guide you along through it. So that being said, I look forward to seeing you guys in the next episode. And make sure to rate, subscribe, and review. And I will see you guys on Thursday.